Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Alan Matthews and Dennis Pacheco.
It is such an honor to be hosting Saturday Night Live.
We got the ghost of Don Pardo. This is a first for Pop Pod, a guest introducing the host. But
I'm loving it. I loved it.
And we will get to that. We will introduce our guest in just a second. Welcome to the podcast. This is The Pursuit of Perfectness, the podcast where we talk about perfectionism and how it shows up in our lives, how we can use it to become better people, how it holds us back, how we can get past it and just kind of not be so hard on ourselves. I'm Dennis Pacheco. My co-host is Alan Matthews, sitting to my in another part of the borough. Hi, Alan.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for continuing to listen to us.
Yes, welcome back. And if this is your first episode, welcome back. I don't know what that means. All right. So we've got, as I said, we've got, should we go over our weeks real quick or no?
Let's do a quick around the horn. Let's do a little quick around the horn. Happy Election Day.
Happy Election Day. Spoiler alert. This was recorded on November 3rd or 2nd or whatever today is, November 2nd. Voted perfectionism. You know what? My therapist canceled on me last week and this week.
Honestly, it's such a betrayal when that happens. I forget that they are human beings with lives of their own.
Yeah, and
But and I am like, you have no idea what's been going on in my head this week. I really need to talk to you.
Yeah, and I was like, and I was sitting there today, and I was like, where is this lady? And I was kind of annoyed. And then she texted, and I texted her, and she was like, oh, I thought I told you last week that I wasn't going to be here this week. And sure enough, she did.
Oh, egg on your face, Dennis.
Egg on my face. So I got to write her back. How about you, Ellen? That's my week update.
Well, you know the incident that happened last week.
We got to talk about it.
I won't get into it too much because I think we're going to dedicate an episode to it.
Yeah. a bonus episode.
Maybe a bonus episode. But I had our first podcast mishap where
snafu,
if you will. We recorded an amazing interview for a full hour, and I only recorded the first 2 minutes of my audio. And when I tell you the negative self-talk that started happening within my brain, I went immediately to Ellen, you are so stupid. You are so bad at technology. Dennis and Amanda hate you for this. You have wasted their time. They're never going to want to work with you again. Like, I'm telling you, the meanness I was telling myself. And then
that's rough.
I know. I called a few people. I talked to you. I talked to Amanda. You guys were amazing and supportive, and that's why it's so important to surround yourself with positive, kind people who kind of help you to be like, this is okay. You're a human being. We make mistakes. This happens to all creators, right? Mm-hmm. I was talking to my friend Steph, who's an artist. She's a photographer. She's like, one time I shot in my studio for 6 hours. And when I got home, I realized I couldn't use any of it.
No.
And she's like, you know what though? I was building 6 hours of muscle memory. And then I went back and I got better shots because I learned so much. And I was like, that's beautiful.
That's the thing.
I'm going to embrace the mistake. I'm going to embrace it.
That's the thing. It's like, it's the lesson we learned from Marvel's Captain Marvel. You know, life knocks you down, but you got to get back up. It's how you handle that. It's how you handle getting knocked down that matters.
A single lesson I learned from Marvel's Captain Marvel, too.
Is that what you took away as well? Yeah. Let's intro our guest because I want to hear some of his thoughts on all this.
Yes, that lovely voice you're hearing is from our beautiful, beautiful guest. He's so gorgeous. He is an actor.
Cannot describe just how handsome our guest is.
He is an actor. He is strolling in from the green room, the antechamber that connects us to the green room, where he was hanging out with the ghost of Don Pardo. Our guest is an actor, improviser, teacher, character performer. Heck, he's an overall comedy loving producer. He is the co-founder of A Rubbish Comedy. Please welcome Zev Badin. Oh, we don't clap. Why do I clap?
Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Don. Close that door before he gets out. Welcome.
Hello.
So lovely to see you. So lovely to have you as a guest. Thank you for coming on.
I woke up like this, but I feel beautiful now that you've said.
I was, I sure wasn't stalling for time while I pulled it up on my phone and just grabbed the first adjective that
Dennis,
came to mind.
What a great stalling technique. They're beautiful, gorgeous, attractive. Like, I love that that's your go-to stall.
Nobody's going to stop you.
No one's going to stop you. They're going to be like, keep searching for those notes.
And bonus, it happens to be true, so.
Oh, wonderful.
Right?
Now, boy, so, oh boy. Looks at the photos of, like, if you post photos with this podcast, they're going to be like, that's the guy?
They're going to be like, that's the guy? Dennis was under exaggerating. What's the opposite? What's the opposite of exaggerating? Is it under exaggerating?
I'm going to go with under exaggerating. Yeah, I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that. Yeah. Zave. Like
even zagger. You know, if you're going to zagger, you
got to even zagger.
Can't be. Yeah.
Yeah. Marvel's even zaggers. Right? Yeah. Oh, boy.
But
we're so lucky. We've had such a great roster of guests, of creators, of innovators and therapists and you know, we know all kinds of, we happen to be lucky enough to know all so many great people. And I definitely want to get into the theater, Rubbish Comedy, with you. But you're here, you want to talk today to us about, you mentioned you wanted to talk about, perfectionism in acting and performing, right?
Yeah.
Learning lines and auditions and all these things. So I saw that and I thought, I feel like Zave, he's a great improviser, but when he, and this is just something that I made up in my mind, that when he acts from a script, that he wants to be word perfect. Did I make that up?
Oh, yeah. It's no, you didn't make that up. No, you didn't. It's funny. I didn't always used to be like that, but there was like a transition in college, and I think I learned that I could, and then that was a terrible gift I gave myself. Was like, oh, I could, if I practice enough, I can nail all of these words exact, and it will still come from me. It, you know, won't just be like, sound like I'm reading lines or like I've memorized, sure, you know, all the words, but it'll, you know, I can make it sound. And that, man, it was cool. But, now I've gotten word perfect, and I don't know how to strike a balance between those two things.
Interesting.
What do you mean? You don't. Does one get in the way of the other? What are you?
Yeah. So from the two perspectives, being I didn't explain what those two things are. Being word perfect, being like one way of approaching it, and then sort of like ad libbing, right? Like having like the verbiage, knowing where you're supposed to go. So
yeah,
that's why like improv is such a great like release in, you know, the using like my creativity and writing and acting at the same time. Doing scripted stuff, it's like it is all, I don't know which way is the way to go when I feels like, if I get cast in something or if I'm like working on a character. So I kind of turn over completely to the writer and go like, okay, well, this is what was written. So let me make sure I really, really like nail those words. So it's either all or nothing, which is a common theme in my life.
Yeah, all or nothing is a big theme for perfectionists.
It's one of we looked up a top 10 list of traits of perfectionism, and all or nothing mentalities was on the list. No middle ground. So Zave, I know you from improv. What type of scripted acting do you do? Is it plays? Is it TV? Or is it all of the above?
Yeah.
I've seen you do sketch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, sketches. I guess I can go in order. I started acting when I was like a kid. Like my first play that I starred in, I was in fourth grade. Ooh. I was Johann Sebastian Bach in Bach to the Future.
No. yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. It was great. It was amazing.
I hope that's top of your resume, because that would be top of my resume no matter what field I were in.
I used the same headshot. It's just a little
wig. Yeah, you had full goatee at 9.
So I've been acting since then, and I was cast in a few movies when I was in middle school, and then had like commercials and stuff it did in South Carolina. And then I acted all through college. I was on, I wasn't an acting like major, but at the, university I was on acting scholarship. So as long as I did all the plays, they like subsidized part of my, education. So that was very cool.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, after college, let's see. Yeah, I kept on acting. I started training. I had moved to D.C. And there weren't like any acting schools that got my attention, but an improv school in D.C. did, and an acting school in New York did. So I was busing basically from D.C. to New York.
Oh my God!
I was living like half the week in one city, half the week in the other city, for the better part of like 6 months, until I completely hit a wall where it was like, all right, you have no money, you have no, there's no thing happening here. So you have to really like buckle down and either decide you're going to live in New York full time and chase this stuff out, or live in, DC and I had family in DC. My mom was in Virginia. So I had at least a, you won't be out on the street poor if you, if it doesn't work out. So that was sort of where I ended up. And I've been acting throughout that whole sort of period. And then since I've been in New York, actually, I don't know when this is going to run. You haven't given me a specific date, just a mark.
We're shooting at the hip here.
Yeah. 2022. Probably.
Cool. So yeah. I was just in a Bud Light.
Oh, man.
Start running November 8th. It's a Bud Light Seltzer tie dye pack. I actually did a couple. I played a dad in that commercial, and then I did a voiceover thing, which is for it. So,
oh man, that's
awesome! Oh my god, wait, what is a tie dye pack like? It's I'm sorry to give Budweiser this much play on our.
Yeah, they're not a sponsor, and they never will be, as far as I'm concerned.
But I'm just so, or maybe I should just wait for the commercial launch.
It's basically seltzer, Bud Light, but the tie dye pack, I think, are different flavors. And then I saw one, it's like cherry cordial. It's like holiday themed. One of the flavors was eggnog, I think.
Okay.
Wow. Very festive.
Probably pretty good. I don't know. Bud Light, hit us up. send us free beer. Cool. Yeah, no, that's so cool. So when you decided to, obviously you decided, well, I'm going to move to New York, right?
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, I remember when you appeared, that's how I remember it, you appeared, one day. And my sense of timing is just all screwed up. So that could have been 5 years ago, could have been 2 years ago. I don't know. But I feel like you appeared and you were like fully formed. I don't know. I don't mean this to sound condescending. You like appeared and I was like, this guy is amazing. Like, who is this guy? Where did he come from?
Next time I see you, Dennis, I'm hugging you and
sure.
Ask for consent if I can.
Of course, yeah. We'll give it. But yeah, I was just like, whoa, you know, because usually you watch people come up, you know, or you see them around, you know.
Right.
But yeah, so you're active at the DC improv scene then.
Yes.
And sketched too, I guess, right? Because then you were on the executives, right? Or are on the executives. Things are a little weird right now with the shutdowns and everything, but yeah, I feel like on the executives and the sketch I've seen, I feel like you let yourself ad lib a little bit. Is it because it's comedy? Yeah. Is it because it's like a black box theater, it's lower stakes? Is it because you're just like, man, I this is fun. I'm going to have fun.
Yeah, I think for me with the executives, a great sketch team, I mean, awesome pedigree at Magnet. And just like super creative people who continue to somehow want to work together and be a part of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the process there is different. So I think because I'm able to be in like the writer's room and sort of, hear what they think is the funny thing, I can feel like, oh, okay, I can like pitch off of that, or I can at least know that if I'm going to be on stage, and I don't, you know, nail the, you know, verbatim, what was written, I can say maybe of, cause that actually feels like it's stuff that's written for me to like perform it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas other things feel like, oh gosh, I got to try and fit this mold,
totally, you
know, this preconceived sort of idea of who should be speaking these lines.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it's like written for you, you're like, well, I can't go wrong, basically.
Yeah.
Right. I saw the process. I know what they think is funny and it's written in my voice. Yeah. Like, and I'm once in a while you just shoot from the hip and you just crack everybody up on stage. And I love those moments where you like see everyone on stage is surprised by a line and it's just like, oh, that's fun. That's everybody's having fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like those are little magical moments of theater, right? Like you get to watch it when you're in an audience, but you get to also watch it when you're like in the performance. If you're there for it, enough.
Yeah. Oh man, that's like whenever I did sketch, my goal was always, well, not always, but my goal was often like, I'm gonna try to make the people on stage with me break.
That's your philosophy in improv too.
It's also
having improvised.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've noticed.
Yeah. I like to surprise people, you know.
You do. Hey, comedy is the element of surprise.
Plus tragedy. Well,
plus tragedy.
Right.
I think that's such like a beautiful image. It seems like, you know, it's a safe environment where you feel like you can kind of experiment a little. I wanna take us to a more stressful environment.
Sure.
So let's talk auditions, where you get a script that wasn't written for you. You weren't involved in the writing process. It's just words on the page. Walk me through, like, you are getting ready. How do you decide, like, how you're going to, like, how you make your choices about nailing those lines, or what you would consider to be nailing those lines?
Yeah, that's really tough, man. That's a great question. I personally, there's so many different voices that live inside my head all the time.
Love it.
Like,
love it. Same.
Really, you know, and they are, some of them are more ridiculous than others, but most of them have like a at least a sliver of truth to that, to like their own, you know, perspective on stuff. So I don't know. I would not say I'm a successful actor by any stretch of the imagination. I think the only reason I even got cast in this role recently was because I was playing a dad, and that's sort of my brand. I am my real life brand is just full on dad. I don't have kids, knock on wood. Just kidding. So I think for me, only because it's the only way I could probably justify continuing to audition over and over again, and maybe, you know, one out of 15 auditions, or yeah, that's probably fair. Fluff up my ego some more and say like maybe one out of 10, one out of 15 auditions is I'd probably get like a callback. But the only reason I can keep doing that is because when I do audition, I try to always make it like a joyful sort of experience for me. I feel like that's there's like my headshots are sort of like me, like, you know, the vibe I give is cherubic.
I love that. Yeah.
Like happy baby kind of vibe. So I usually try to, you know, and then Meisner stuff has helped a lot with just listening to what's being said, and doing like the preparation before, and like really having an understanding of what it is your character or the character is supposed to be doing. And then those lines starting from there, as opposed to like, you know, just the words.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an experience where you've left and you're like, I should have said it like this, or like, do you ever like fixate on like one line or something? And you're like, that was the determining factor.
Oh yeah. It's funny, cause I have auditions in English and Spanish, and the worst auditions I ever have been on are ones where they have me like reading, you know, from like a prompter or something, in the room, or like I've had absolutely no time to like prep stuff, because I do speak Spanish, but it's not like, like words get jarbled up.
Sure.
You know, like, and so like going quickly. So I guess in English, I'd say it happens to me more in Spanish, where I will like nail the line days later. I'll like practice it. I remember I had a Bob's Discount Furniture commercial in Spanish probably like 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. And it was something, and it like I fucking rocked it. Like a month and a half later, out of nowhere, the line just like came. Man, I was like, "Oh yeah, that's it would just come out like that." I think the English auditions, I kind of have gotten myself to a point where, at least in auditioning, I can kind of leave it at the door when I walk out. You know, like just kind of leave it there and assume that I'm not going to hear anything, so that when I do hear something, it's like, oh shit, great, I completely forgot I did that thing. But when it comes to my day job, work wise, I sort of have transitioned that obsession with being word perfect to my work. I work for, it doesn't really matter, but I do like a lot of speaking at my job. And the stuff that comes up is usually crafted from like lawyers or experts, or, you know, you have to say it like this specific way, because if you don't, then there's liability around it. So that same sort of pressure I think I've put on myself when I learned. I told you I'm crazy a little bit, so I'm bouncing around. But
no, we love this.
The play that I did that taught me I could be word perfect was a play called Greater Tuna. I don't even remember who wrote it, but it's a funny, crazy script where it's two performers who play, I want to say, like 25 different characters in this show.
Oh, wow.
So like taking things up, and in all these different character voices, I was able to like nail lines and stuff. Greater Tuna. So anyways, let me come back. So yeah, the stakes are high. Oh, and then after that, I ended up playing Salieri in Amadeus like a year later.
Oh, wow.
Tuna. And that entire play is, I feel like it was like 4 hours long of a play because we made tons of cuts and it was still half of the script were just like Salieri lines.
Wow.
He's like introducing all of these like
right.
and people and it's all through his like perspective. And that was intense. And now I feel like there's so much room for interpretation on stuff that I'm not sure if I'm ever right. So,
wow. Well, I mean,
I'm
what,
all over
yeah.
speaking with you guys.
No,
no, yeah.
No, it's beautiful. But it's like, beautiful.
But like, right is totally subjective, right?
Is it though?
Yes, it is. And let me share with you an analogy that I was formulating as you were speaking. Like the amount of energy, if we like go back to the audition, for an example, like I got to get it right. So I'm imagining like an archer, right? And she is shooting. You thought I was going to say he. Check your bias.
I did.
She is shooting at the target and the goal is to get the center, the bullseye, right? And so when you're trying to get it exactly right in your acting and your audition, it's like you're trying to did you just mute? Dennis muted and it threw me off. Right in the middle of my analogy. We want to get to the bullseye, but that's not the tool we're using, right? Like there is no bullseye. Like they're using a different metric and you don't even know what it is. Does that make sense? It's like you're so focused on this and like they're like, you just have no idea what is happening in their mind, what they're looking for, and you'll never know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like getting it right, it's like you can't even begin to know what that is.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think from your perspective, I think that's absolutely true. I think from my perspective, right is less because I'm looking at less of an archer and her hitting her target and more of me being I'm creating the bullseye. For me, so like,
oh, that. Interesting.
You know what I mean? Oh.
So if I can show up and that bullseye is like reflective of like my right or like my best effort, my sort of like, all the good things where you feel like you're present and you're,
yeah,
are given it, you're you as opposed to being like distracted or preoccupied or tired,
yes,
or you know, all those like sort of things that kind of pull away from being available. So I don't know if that's a healthy thing to do because
I think it's healthier, right? Because you're going by your own standards, which you have some control over, as opposed to trying to guess what someone else's standards might be.
Yeah.
I like that because then you could be like, oh, if someone didn't like it, I'm still proud of what I did because I was prepared. I am really proud of the work I did and therefore I win, you know?
Yeah.
I like that. I think that's a good way to be.
Something cool. I don't know if you guys audition frequently or are even interested, but I saw something cool from an acting teacher recently that was like don't I'm going to say it wrong, and so it's like I should probably.
Oh, this is a trigger for you. You're going to get the words wrong.
I do just to answer your question. I do while you look for that. I do go on audition sometimes. I did a self tape today, and it was just facial expressions for a commercial. And I like looked at the tape after and I was like, I'm not happy with this, but I submitted it anyway. I was like, I just have to do it. I just have to submit it. And I don't know.
That's even like, more confusing. You're like, did I scowl right?
You know, well, I'll tell you what it was. The one that really got me was like smile. Like smiling, smiling on command and making it look natural is like one of the hardest things in the world for me.
Yeah.
Especially into a camera.
Into a camera. Yeah.
Yeah, it always ends up looking like a little bit creepy. That's why whenever I take pictures of people, I try to like make a joke or like mm-hmm. tease them a little bit so that they laugh, because that looks really wonderful and beautiful yeah. instead of like say cheese and then they have these like crazy looks on their faces.
Yeah, I was like shooting myself and I thought, okay,
you needed a director is what you yeah. needed.
I was like, think of something funny. And I was like, I can't think of anything funny, but I have to submit this. So I just did my smile and I was like, well, that doesn't look real. And then I submitted it. Anyway, did you find the quote?
And the quote. Yeah, the quote. It said, book the room, not the job.
Mm.
I love a quote.
I was like, oh yeah, I can. Okay, if I can focus on that, you know. But maybe have a little bit more dynamic approach to things.
I love that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, are you going into actual rooms more now? Because for me, I'm still getting just all self tapes. Every once in a while, a virtual audition, but like I'm getting nothing in person.
Yeah, so I haven't done any in-person stuff, but I did do a weird thing. I can't remember. It was like something like pants or something. It was a weird like website that you went to, and it was a virtual audition room. So I guess
It's like Blue Jeans, I think.
Yes, yeah, probably yeah, something yeah. like that. But you had like all the other actors are in the same space with you, and you're waiting there.
Oh God, I hate
all
that.
All of a sudden, like an assistant like shows up, and they're like, "Okay, it'll be just 1 minute for you. You're on deck," and then they put you in another waiting room.
Yeah,
you're on deck. It mimics the entire process of going to, like those. Like cattle call auditions, yeah. you know.
Even the like shitty stressful parts.
Yeah, like yeah, you. Yeah. We don't have to do this,
but we're going to.
Yeah, it's called Blue Jeans, and then yeah.
like all of those people are like around. You know, either cameras on or cameras off, and you know the client's there too, and it's like
so weird.
It's a really interesting experience.
You go in and like a couple people have their cameras on, and it like you know I remember I did one and my camera was on, and I was just kind of sitting there and like I was going over the line, so I turned my mic off, but my camera was still on, and like people would come into the room and like say hi to me, and I was like I'm not the person that you. I don't want you to talk to me. You
know? That sounds so
it's such a weird, awkward. Weird environment.
Oh man, oh man. Well, I just
clicked in my head.
Yeah. Say it.
Just clicked in my head. I think the bullseye that you try to shoot for is me, is an authentic version of myself. And if I'm acting, right, if I'm not like being myself, maybe it's me under like imaginary circumstances, right? It's like Meisner's definition of acting is behaving truthfully under imaginary circumstances. Mm. So I think that's my bullseye, is that I give myself those circumstances that feel accurate and authentic. But all of that is worthless there's actual value. It's just not necessarily translated into dollars because
sure.
it goes, you know, it's subjective, like you said.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, first
one way is framing it. Maybe my therapist would be happy with me framing it that way. So it's like, at least I walk away from it and with like a more positive, like, well, I definitely nailed the bullseye I was shooting for. It wasn't maybe aligned 100%. With their bullseye.
100%. First of all, thank you for continuing with my analogy. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. And secondly, Dennis and I are not therapists, but on the show, we often pretend to be. And I would just like to say, as a pretend therapist, that I think the way I think I would give you an A+ for how you mentally prepare and the perspective you have for going through these really stressful experiences. I think you set up expectations and goals that are on your terms. And I love the idea that, like, you said that you create a very joyful experience, right? Because you're going to be doing a lot of them. So why not make all of them joyful, right? Make them fun for you and the people there. And to leave it in the room. You've nailed, right? Book the room, not the job. So once you've done the addition, you've already won. I just think that's chef's kiss, beautiful perspective on life, a beautiful way to be, and we should all try to be more like that. Mm. Dennis, any thoughts based on your pretend therapy degree?
As a pretend therapist, I'd say what my therapist tells me to do before auditions is just, I got a list of things I do before auditions, but the main big one is just be prepared. So as your fake therapist, I'd say you're booking the room, you're prepared, keep it up. You got a great attitude, and our copay is a very reasonable $10.
Very reasonable. You can just Venmo right just Venmo. After.
Venmo is not a sponsor, but we'd love some money. So they send you samples of money, right? Venmo.
What a great philosophy to live by, and I think that can just be translated into all experiences of life, right? Like, live by your own standards. Don't hold on to things. Don't take things with you, right? Don't take the stress with you. Live in the moment. These are all things that make for a good life, I think.
Yeah, and I don't want to be unrealistic too, or you know. I don't want people to walk away thinking I'm like on some fucking planet that's not Earth. I think that it's hard to, there's something about contrast, right? Like the striking balance, something like very true about like life and the world. You know, we have contrast. We have the sun comes up half the day and then the moon comes up the other half of the day, right? And with that, so I guess what I'm trying to say is, if it's a struggle to figure out those things that feel good to align yourself mm-hmm. with and shoot for, but I think it helps to have like community and people that you respect and who respect you back in like an authentic way that sort of validate those things for you. And yes. If not at least peers, then at least an actual like professional, whether it's a psychotherapist or just like like a social worker, like somebody who's able to bounce off, you know, you can bounce off of, because all of that shit is just like framing the reality that you already have, and then being convinced that it's right or being convinced that it's real.
Yeah.
I love that point, because I think like it's important too. And I dealt with this last week of like, yeah, like have this perspective, but it's also like okay to be disappointed. It's also okay to be mad or sad, and like to allow yourself the space to feel all those things. It doesn't mean that we have to be like Pollyanna about everything. Right, and it's like, I'm going to see the silver lining in everything at all times. It's like, no, you're allowed to be pissed sometimes. Like, that's okay.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you got it.
It's the sun and the moon, you know? Yeah. It's both things.
There's that quote that's like, you're not a human, you're not a human being having a spiritual experience. You're a spiritual being having a human experience.
Ooh, let that sit. You are full of amazing quotes.
Wrong. You should.
We could make the episode title any of these.
I know. We have so many options for a title. These are some gems. Okay.
I want to switch gears and talk about rubbish. Rubbish comedy.
Should we take a quick break before we transition?
Sure. Let's take. It's a little bit of a late break, but yeah, let's do it.
Late break.
Life break. Welcome back.
We're back. Dennis, take us into that sweet, sweet transition.
Let's talk about rubbish. So you started your own comedy theater. I would say in the wake of the pandemic kind of changing the whole like environment, the whole landscape, thank you, of improv in New York City. Yeah, this I'm trying to create something, put my pictures in your brain. But yeah, in the wake of the whole like landscape of New York City improv changing, kind of all these huge upheavals, you know, with UCB shutting down and Pitt, like they're losing their main stage and all this stuff happening. And new things are popping up, which is very cool and very exciting. But the one I'm most excited about is Rubbish. Do you want to talk a little bit about the comedy theater that you co-founded?
I'll pass.
Okay, cool.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Well, I'll be honest, I don't believe in it.
Comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool thing. I appreciate your kind words there. I think we are we're still figuring things out in this sort of new landscape, this new world that we're living in, where you know, the threat of illness is, you know, it's like present and real. Mm-hmm. And a possibility, even though it's like less so in New York, luckily, because we have a lot of people who've participated and are participating in safety measures and all that stuff. But we're still, like, everybody's still trying to figure out how to move forward in the world. But mm-hmm. It was really, really cool that I was able to come along at the right time with the other people who have also co-founded the theater. And we all sort of shared the same perspective on what comedy community we would like to be a part of. And that's sort of like the basis for everything we're doing, right? We're like, we want to be a part of something that is fucking hilarious, that is very, very fun, that's like good for the spirit, the joy of like doing comedy.
Yes.
And also like is a means to artistic advancement, right? Like commercial advancement, all those things,
right?
That
yeah,
you want to have in a community, in a school. I think we've done a pretty good job at like verbalizing that stuff and holding ourselves accountable to those things, because as you start moving forward, things start to like fall apart, and you know, energies, there's only so much energy you have in a day and bandwidth to focus on things. So but yeah, that's what we're trying to do. Some cool things. We just had our first show about a week or two ago. It was sold out. It was a really
cool
experience down in Tribeca at a place called Town Stages. So yeah, it was wonderful. We have classes going on, and it's focused on, you know, the traditional comedy theater things of improv and sketch. We have stand-up also. We have a clown class that's ongoing. There's a storytelling class that's coming up soon, a late night TV writing workshop that's also coming up at the end of November. And then just making it so it's like accessible to your to anyone, right? Like if there are financial barriers, like figuring out how to work around those. And then ultimately, like, we're not a nonprofit right now, because getting a nonprofit status is pretty difficult in New York right now, and you have to have like a bunch of prerequisites already met. But we are essentially operating like a nonprofit. Like, we're not, like, we're really focused on being accessible to underrepresented communities, and helping people to figure out how to navigate what I call the comedy economy, right? Mm. Like if you want to get paid for your comedy, or, you know, how does that look, or what might that look like? Mm. So it's really cool. It's ambitious as fuck, but we are also trying to grow the collective. That's why we are a collective. We are like the first four right now, but ultimately we have like two people who we're excited to announce are going to be a part of our growth. And as we like keep moving forward, I think what we've done is just try to be the inertia of like that little bit of a snowball coming down the hill. And then once it starts to pick up, you know, it starts to add more snow, and then it goes in all sorts of different directions that can't be predicted. But because of what's added on, you know, we keep on growing, and the speed grows, and where we end up, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. So
it's amazing.
Sounds like when you decided to, because I'm curious about what I have like three questions that are like trying to come out at the same time, but like like one is like what started that ball rolling for you of you know what, I want to start a comedy collective, and then also like, but it seems like you started it with the thought of like, but I want to start it from the right place and center, you know, accessibility and opportunity for underrepresented voices and just starting from a really good core there. And then I forgot the other question.
And also like, and who are your co-founders? Like, did you have the same kind of ideas? Is that how you found each other? And yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So the co-founders are Audrey Stanfield, who does and has done a lot of sketch comedy characters, has performed a bunch, and Molly Gaby. I was trying to think of other things that Audrey's done. She's an actress. She's awesome. She's amazing. Molly Gaby, who's also amazing. She's an improviser, a character performer. She works with the Abortion Access Front. She's like a really passionate and hilarious individual. Like, you know, you meet people who are like lightning fast with comedy.
Yes.
Like, it just, the thing as it's coming out of someone else's mouth is already being translated into something hilarious and coming out of her mouth
almost at the same moment. Wow.
And then Zach Willis also. Zach Willis, who is just an incredible performer and a really like gifted teacher. I took a workshop with him over the pandemic, just because it was recommended to a friend, and he was trying to figure out how to nail some things. So he wanted a class of people who had done improv before in person to do it on Zoom. And I'd never worked with him before. My wife had, my best friend had taken a bunch of classes with him. So he came highly recommended. I was like, sure, this seems like a great opportunity. Did the class, and just I'm like, I don't know, I always try to facilitate fun. So even if, like, you know, it's like if you, like, I don't know, and I know it's difficult to be a teacher, so in the class I kind of made myself like the honorary TA or like big sib of the class.
I love that.
You know, I mean, it wasn't nothing official. It was just me just going like, oh, okay, how do I make this so that it's like, it's, you know, it's, I didn't know everybody's like improv background anyways. So I was just having a great time and trying to make it like fun for other people.
Facilitating the fun.
Yeah.
Exactly. Facilitating the fun. That's, you nailed it.
Well, you said it.
I'm sure he really appreciated that too. I'm sure it really helped, you know, the vibe of the class. Yeah.
And we got to talking after the class was over. A conversation that was supposed to be 15 minutes was like an hour, and that just kind of one thing led to another, and now he and I are running the school part of Rubbish Comedy, and Audrey and Molly are running the performance stage part of the theater. So
wow,
that's cool.
That is so exciting. Do you all have a space, or is it more of like a concept and then you rent out venues for classes and for shows?
Yeah, so we actually are starting our theater residency at a place called Dixon Place in Lower Manhattan. It's on 161 Christie Street, 10002. That's the address. I only know it because I was sharing it. We just announced that on social media today, actually. And yeah, we're starting our residency there for performances. We've had a residency at Town Stages. So we had our first big show at Town Stages, and we've had classes there over the last few months. So yeah, we are in concept. But that's a cool thing about, I don't know if it's, forgive me if I start talking too much, let me know, just like raise your hand, just tell me like, okay, that's good, we're good.
Doing amazing.
That's why you're here.
Yeah,
like, you know how we've shifted from like 30 years ago, you were like expected to like buy a house, buy a car, and like have sort of this like career kind of a job. Right. And like nowadays, I think at least let me just stick with the car part of this analogy. We don't really need to own a car in order to like to live our lives. But if we need a car, we'll like rent a car.
Yes.
Or do a share. Or we'll, you know, that's sort of where I think we are trying to. What we're trying to embrace as far as like the theater's concerned.
Yes.
Like, we're not going to own, I mean, it's impossible to own anything in New York.
Oh, yeah.
true.
You know, but what we can do is like exist and, you know, do the things. And it would be great to have like a performance every day of the week and have stuff lined up and have that sort of demand. And for the places that do it, it's still unbelievable that they can do that and how great of a community that can support that.
Yeah.
But right now we're trying to figure out our own thing, which is exciting but terrifying at the same time. Mm-hmm. And more so along the model of like, okay, like you said, Ellen, the like concept, you know, like we exist, it all exists here and in our interaction. We don't need like a building necessarily to
totally
be, you know, what we are wanting to create. So
yeah, when we need space, I was just gonna say, when you need space, you'll need a space. When you need a car, you get Zipcar, you know. When you Zipcar is not a sponsor, but you're right, like when
and
you
they
need
never
it
will be, as far as I'm concerned.
When you need it,
I've got a list of companies that will never, I refuse to let them.
And I think also like if the pandemic showed us that it's about the community, it's not about the space. Like that's how I felt about Magnet Theater, you know. Yeah. We lost our training center. Thankfully we still have our theater, but I'm like, it doesn't feel like anything went away. It's because the community is still there. So I love that concept, because that's when you're really understanding like your priorities. Like it's about the vision and the people and the community. That's what it is, not a building.
Yeah. And I think that Magnet is such a beautiful paradigm or like model to sort of like inspire where we'd like to go, because really I've never seen apart from like 1 year when I first started doing improv, so I'm also like biased because there's that magic when you first start.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But Magnet really has that sort of community feel where like people like to be around each other and be creative with each other.
Yes.
You know, and people aren't just like showing up to just search out their own like limelight, you know, or you know, to make themselves famous or better, whatever. They're like really interested in doing the thing and laughing together. Which is such a cool community thing that and it's, I mean, it's obvious, right, when you look at the places that have been knocked out. As far as like the pandemic's concerned, like Magnet has survived, you know, other places, you know, haven't, and it's testament to what cool thing that they have going on.
Mm.
It's, and I love, if it's not obvious, I love Magnet. I still perform at Magnet. I also am working with Rubbish and creating stuff with Rubbish because, you know, I don't get to call the shots at Magnet.
Oh, absolutely. And Magnet would be like the first Magnet, the concept, this entity would be the first like person to be like, yeah, go do that. That sounds awesome. You know what I mean? Like, that's Magnet's vibe. They'd be like, yeah, you should go start another theater. Like, Magnet is not a jealous being. Again, I'm talking about Magnet like it's like a monster blob, but like, it's not a jealous monster blob. It wants you to go out and do your thing.
Yeah, don't believe the hype. Magnet is not a jealous monster blob.
Listen, I do. I think I have a lot of images in my head, like the bullseye and the monster blob.
Monster blob is female.
Check your biases.
I just had a real quick question. If it's going to be quick.
Final question from Dennis.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be quick or not. I was just real curious about when you said calling the shots was like important to you. You explain what that means because that could tie into perfectionism too. That like,
oh, interesting.
You know, like I have a vision, and I would like to execute it in a specific way. Is that what that means?
Yeah. No, I mean, well, maybe. I'm going to listen back on this and probably have some insights and discoveries for myself, just hearing the conversation, but maybe it does. I think I don't know, man. It's easier to do if you have something that you want to do and you're like really fucking motivated to do it.
Yeah.
Like going out and doing it on your own is absolutely a viable path. And like, it's hard, but you should absolutely do it. I think the reason why we've come together is because we all have like a piece of it, and I think that's almost better than having it all figured out by yourself, because then I can't speak to that because that's not where I am right now. I do know that before I even came to New York, I had been doing improv for years and performing for years, and I've developed like this kind of approach that was more on communication skills and development and the kind of like comfort of what would otherwise be they're basically like using improv for professional development, right? Like being comfortable in uncomfortable situations and having something to do. So I've come to New York with that sort of mindset, and then working with Rubbish, calling the shots,
because it's collaborative still.
Ultimately no one is really there. Yeah. That's sort of maybe the challenge of it, right? Is like you attract, I think I've heard this before, but like you attract in your life the challenges that are things that you need to work on.
Interesting.
And so I think maybe to a certain extent the great benefit of working with Rubbish and as we grow too is like having an idea and then knowing that it's not the right idea, but it's the least wrong idea that you know of, right? So you still have like room for other less wrong ideas. So you aren't convinced of like a singular perfect thing.
Right.
And instead you're like, oh, everything could be, you know, depending on, you know, everything's just less imperfect, you know?
Yes. Yes.
I think that
I love that. And I, again, as your pretend therapist, I think that is such that, well, two reasons why I think that you have a healthy point of view going into this theater. One is you used the analogy of a snowball, because you know that like part of it's, you know, you create this thing, but then it's going to get to a point where it's like a little bit out of your control, right? Like a snowball is like, oh, that's out of my hand. It kind of takes on an energy of its own. And I think like knowing that is like very healthy. And then the other thing is like with your language, you're not looking to make this perfect. You're just trying to make it, you know, the best imperfect thing, you know? And I think just, you're so self-aware. I really like your attitude. I really like your attitude. I like your perspective on life and the way you approach projects. And I learned a lot, and I'm going to try to adopt those in my own life.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. The least imperfect. Thank you. The least imperfect thing is just such a great
phrase. It really is. It's a great phrase. Lots of good quotes tonight.
Save, this has been...
I'm insufferable in person. I'm
absolutely.
you got me for an hour.
I don't
doing
agree.
An improv workshop soon. Come up. I'll lay more quotes on you. At
yes!
Teamwork workshop coming up soon. So,
so where can people find more information on Rubbish Comedy?
At Rubbish Comedy on Instagram and Twitter.
Beautiful.
And on Facebook, we are at Rubbish Comedy NYC on Facebook. And then if you're interested in my musings, through visual medium on Instagram, I'm at Zave Tiger, and also at Zave Tiger on Instagram.
Okay.
Wonderful.
And then that website for Rubbish Comedy is rubbishcomedy.com, right?
That's right. Yeah. Let's redo this part. Let's clip it. Let's clip it. I'm going to make this way more concise. So, yeah, Rubbish Comedy.
Unusable. Folks, rubbishcomedy.com.
We're at rubbishcomedy.com.
And do you offer any virtual classes, or is it in person only? Or
we've got a mix of both.
Cool. So, folks, wherever you're listening in the world, you can take a class virtually online. And if you haven't taken an improv class before, it's the best thing that you will ever do, guaranteed.
And stand up and clown. I did a clown workshop online.
Storytelling, clown.
Yeah, storytelling is coming up soon. Yeah. So many different things are online. We're trying to do like a one-to-one. If we do something in person, we try to offer it online as well.
Oh, cool.
Oh, beautiful.
Very cool.
That's amazing.
I can't wait to visit one of those spaces, Town Stages and Christie Street Theater, which I forgot the name of.
Dixon Place.
Yeah. That's like
they're
Chinatown?
A wonderful theater. It's actually in the village. It's like near the East Village.
Okay. I don't know New York.
I know it's Lower Manhattan.
You know it better than I do. I'm sort of from here.
BDFM line,
Orange Line. Watch out for that train, folks. Well, that was great. Ellen, do you have any final thoughts? Any words of therapy?
I gave my final thoughts. I gave a glowing review of Zave's mindset that I think we can all take home with us. And I'm really excited. I'm totally checking out Rubbish Comedy. I'm like super excited. I'm going to go to the shows. I'm going to tell everyone about it. So
yeah, me too.
Super pumped.
Support comedy, folks. All right. Well, that is it for this week. Follow us on Instagram at Pursuit of Perfectness. And we're the Pursuit of Perfectness on Facebook. Write us an email at pursuitofperfectness@gmail.com. If you like what you heard, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe. Tell your friends. Want to give a big thanks to Keith Bergen for our theme music and to me for our podcast art. I'm still really curious to see what that's going to look like. We will talk to you next time. Until then, don't be so hard on yourself.
Bye.
Bye. Don Pardo. You're Don Pardo. Shout us out.
Goodbye.